Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Snyder Cut. I've lost track of what episode it is. We'll figure that out later. Oh, it's a good day. It's a good day. I can feel it. Where should we start? Where do you guys want to start? How about the Batman castings? Andy Serkis and Colin Farrell. Andy Serkis has been cast as Alfred Pennyworth, and Colin Farrell is in talks to play the Penguin. Now, at first, I don't like it. I can't see it. I like Colin Farrell. I don't think he's great in bigger movies. I think Colin Farrell is like a character actor in a leading man's body. He's a lot like Brad Pitt in that regard. And so I suppose in that sense, like, you know, because the Penguin I see as more of like a he's not the main villain in this, I don't think. So having a character actor play him is for the best. And Colin Farrell, he is interesting in these sort of smaller supporting roles, but just, I don't know, he has bad luck when it comes to big movies. I know, I'm glad that they didn't cast like another heavy set actor. I would have liked to have seen, I don't know, some like a complete reinvention of this character, like having a woman play the Penguin. I like that they ended up, that Reeves ended up going 40 plus with this. I just struggle to see Colin Farrell. Like, the cast does not mesh for me. Like, when you say Robert Pattinson, Paul Dano, Colin Farrell, and Zoe Kravitz, I'm not sure that really excites me. I mean, Pattinson, I'm torn on. I don't know that he'll make a great Batman. Dano's excellent as the Riddler. I was 100% behind that, and I really like Jeffrey Wright as Commissioner Gordon. But yeah, Colin Farrell, Zoe Kravitz, I don't know about these guys. I'm just worried. And when I say I'm worried, it's not just based on the casting of Colin Farrell, please. Although, you know, Warner Brothers has always sort of had a hard-on for this guy. It's more based on, like, how many people have passed on this role. Like, they couldn't work anything out with Jonah Hill. They couldn't work it out with, I guess, Seth Rogen they were talking to. I don't know if they ever, you know, this just feels weird. It's like a maybe cramming some movie star in there, even though Colin Farrell isn't really a movie star. Like, he doesn't drive box office. And something like Dumbo, which, you know, you can't put on him, and I actually like Dumbo more than most people. He disappeared in Dumbo. He just, like, we don't even remember him being there. So I worry that he, like, blends into the scenery a little bit too much as in these big movies. Andy Serkis, I don't see really him as Alfred either. Like, I don't need Alfred to have, like, bulging forearms, you know? When I think of Serkis, I'm thinking of, like, Ulysses Claw or whatever the hell his name was in the Avengers movies or in Black Panther. Like, I would have liked to have seen Andy Serkis as the Penguin. That is something I could have really gotten behind. And it's like, if Andy Serkis is available for this shoot, and I don't even know how he is since he's developing Venom 2. I thought Venom 2 was, like, going soon. But I guess Andy Serkis is going to be available for the shoot. Then if he was, why not have him play the Penguin? I just don't love the way that this cast has come together this far. I don't know. We still don't really know what Matt Reeves' approach is. And Justin Kroll at Variety tweeted that up next is going to be the casting of Two-Face. And I've also heard Mad Hatter is in the movie. Two-Face, you know, Harvey Dent. I don't know if Two-Face is actually going to appear or if it's going to be Harvey Dent throughout this movie. And then it sets up Two-Face for the sequel. Because, don't forget that Matt Reeves has planned a trilogy here. This isn't just a one-off like Joker. I put together a list of like 15 actors who could play Harvey Dent in the Batman. Half of them were my picks. Half of them were my Collider cohorts picks. You know, I think I came up with a pretty good reasoning behind each one. Some were obviously more outlandish than others. I mean, Jennifer Lopez, yeah, I see where the snide comments came in. But then again, you know, Warner Brothers chases heat. And out of everyone on that list, I don't think anybody's really hotter than J-Lo right now, besides maybe Adam Driver. So I don't know. I just want something different. I want something original. I think Matt Reeves is the guy to do that. I'm not surprised that he got Andy Serkis. Like, that was kind of a no-brainer. So I'm glad that he's going to be along for the ride. But, yeah, Colin Farrell just seems like the kind of choice a Len Wiseman would have made or something. It's a bit of a head-scratcher. I guess I'll trust Matt Reeves, you know, who hasn't steered us wrong with his, like, Apes casting, which I thought was, you know, very spot on. But, yeah, I don't know. We'll see. Justice Smith and Daniela Pineda returning to Jurassic World 3. That was a story I broke for Collider. It didn't hit quite as big as I thought it might, probably just because, you know, once you announce that the original Jurassic Park trio is returning, it's hard to top that announcement. These two were part of the cast of Fallen Kingdom. I don't know how much kind of screen time is going to be available for these two, since this is, at the end of the day, still a Chris Pratt and Bryce Dallas Howard franchise. Plus, you're bringing back Sam Neill, Laura Dern, Jeff Goldblum, and what's been described as sizable roles. So, you know, these guys may just be sort of background players, wallpaper, in a sense. Neither one of them really stood out. Fallen Kingdom is already kind of I've been like, you know, Men in Black. Like, they use the little device on me, and I completely forget, like, what Fallen Kingdom was or the ins and outs of that. I mean, Jurassic World, this franchise, it has let me down. To me, Jurassic Park is one of the greatest movies ever made. Like, that is a masterpiece. A blockbuster masterpiece. And, Lost World was okay, but every Jurassic movie since then has kind of just been underwhelming. Like, they just have not been able to put it all together. There's just, I don't know. It's not really for me. But Colin Trevorrow is back in the director's chair. I thought he did a decent job on Jurassic World. It was certainly better than the sequel. And he has something to prove, Trevorrow, coming off of Book of Henry. So, yeah, you know, I hope he does it. The reaction to that short film, Battle at Big Rock, was good. Elsewhere, John Boyega and Jeremy Saulnier teaming up for the Netflix thriller Rebel Ridge. This is going to be like a high-velocity movie that explores injustice in America. I'm told that John Boyega is going to be playing an ex-Marine who takes on like a group of dirty cops. This is a reunion for director Jeremy Saulnier, whose last film, Hold the Dark, was released by Netflix. It's a movie was interesting. It was not what I was expecting. I was expecting like a wolf movie, and it turned out to be something very different. But I like Saulnier overall. I like his vibe. I think Green Room is one of the best horror movies of the decade. And to see John Boyega do something a little bit darker after Star Wars, I'm all for it. Like, you know, Detroit didn't really work for me. Some of the projects that he is a part of, you know, like Pacific Rim Uprising, I didn't even bother to see that one. I think there's like something called the Naked Singularity coming out. I'm like, well, what are these? But Rebel Ridge sounds actually really interesting, and I like that pairing on paper. So yeah, looking forward to seeing like, you know, who plays like the villain, who plays these dirty cops. I hope Saulnier, he's got. I like his taste in casting. I liked all the casting for Green Book. Yeah, like, he managed to get Patrick Stewart in that movie. Anton Yelkin's fantastic in it. Joe Cole. Like, yeah. This is definitely a Netflix movie to keep an eye on. Elsewhere, Peyton Reed back for Ant-Man 3. I love this news. I love that, you know, Marvel is, you know, like with James Gunn, who has a certain authorship over the Guardians of the Galaxy franchise, they've really felt like Peyton Reed is the caretaker of Ant-Man. I don't know that, you know, anybody else was ever being discussed for this job. Like, it's just a no-brainer. Ant-Man remains my favorite MCU movie. I just think it's exactly what these movies should be, and Paul Rudd is perfect as Scott Lang. The sequel wasn't nearly as good. I mean, maybe because I had high hopes, because I loved that first film. That's why it felt like such a disappointment. Maybe it was because it felt like it had to service a whole bunch of other stuff. But yeah, I love the idea of Peyton Reed coming back, finish this trilogy. I don't know that, there'll be a fourth Ant-Man movie the way that Thor's getting a fourth movie. Ant-Man has always sort of, been on the lower end of Marvel performers. But I just love how creative and imaginative this franchise has been. So it'll be fun to have Peyton Reed back in the director's chair. Ben Affleck starring in Robert Rodriguez's Hypnotic. I don't even have the log line in front of me. I was tracking this project for so long, guys. It's been like months and months since I'd first heard about this one. It was denied up and down. Of course, AFM time rolls around. Let's talk about AFM. Like, these projects, what a pain. It's like you've seen Kroll probably tweet about it. Like, it's just one of the most miserable times of the year with all these, like, AFM. It's just like, they just sell garbage. The international territories, these movies that actors do for paychecks. I'm trying to think what the hot sales ones were. Oh, okay. So Channing Tatum, who hasn't really been in the news much. You saw Kroll was on Movie Talk last week, and he announced a Channing Tatum project on the air where he's, like, losing his hearing. Now there's a movie called Dog that he's doing where he's an Army Ranger in, like, a canine buddy movie. Man, this guy's career has kind of fallen. I mean, I'd love to see Channing Tatum do something awesome and cool soon. Neither of these projects really sound like it. Zac Efron stepped in this week to replace Seth Rogen in the John McAfee movie, King of the Jungle. The John McAfee story is bonkers. This guy invented, antivirus software and then took his money and went and moved out to the jungles of Belize and built himself this compound. It's full of guns. It's full of, like, underage girls. It's wild. And the guy's, like, super paranoid. So Michael Keaton was going to play him, and my buddy Rocco Castoro, who is here at Collider with me, he has been super involved, or interested, not involved, but super interested in this project, because I think he's got his own McAfee. He has a personal interest in John McAfee, so I've been keeping an eye on this movie for him. And yeah, Michael Keaton was going to play McAfee. He just departed. He's got this Aaron Sorkin thing. He just signed on to this another AFM project, The Asset, which is going to pair him with Maggie Q and Sam Jackson. We'll talk about that in a second. But so, yeah, he dropped out as McAfee. Efron's replacing Seth Rogen, which is like, okay. I never thought that those neighbors stars would be able to switch roles, but so be it. Meanwhile, the announcement on Deadline was written by this guy, and the reporter is like, will we get to see Zac Efron with his shirt off? I mean, remember that scene in Crazy, because it's from the Crazy Stupid Love filmmakers. Remember that scene in Crazy Stupid Love where Ryan Gosling had his shirt off? I'm like, who is writing these trade announcements these days? What if I was writing, like, an Alicia Silverstone story and I was like, well, will we get to see her in her bikini like we did in The Crush? I don't know, but stay tuned. It's just so weird. It's something that I've noticed a lot, frankly. Like, you can't have straight male writers sort of oogling, whatever it is. They're female subjects, but, I have a lot of gay friends. I love gay people, but a lot of these gay reporters out there these days are just like drooling over the male subjects, and it's very awkward. I just feel like everyone should be held to the same standards in terms of writing about celebrities. Anyways, that was like a little tangent that just kind of came up. It wasn't even in the show notes for today. I have definitely noticed that from time to time, and it kind of takes me aback. Not because of, it's a guy writing about another guy. Like, that's great. More power to you. But I don't know. We owe these celebrities a certain level of respect, and I don't need to be speculating about Zac Efron's shirtless scenes. Like, it's really no different than speculating about an actress's, nude scenes or topless scenes because she's done them in the past. It's weird. It's weird. It's just a completely unnecessary line in a project announcement or a casting announcement on a trade. What else was happening at AFM? God, look at these projects. Jessica Chastain playing a tormented artist in Losing Clementine. This sounds boring. An artist who decides she's done with it all, she's going to kill herself, gives herself 31 days to tie up loose ends. Doesn't sound very interesting. Rachel White's cast as Elizabeth Taylor in A Special Relationship from Bert and Bertie, the female directing duo. You know, they have that Troop Zero movie coming out. I heard it was okay. I think it was at Amazon, at Sundance. They're a duo to keep an eye on, and I like, you know, Elizabeth Taylor's done a lot for AIDS and the AIDS HIV positive community and everything. So a movie focusing on that aspect of her life as an activist could be interesting rather than just, you know, looking at her marriages or Cleopatra or whatever it is. Cash Truck got picked up by MGM. Jason, that's the Guy Ritchie Jason Statham movie. They added Scott Eastwood and Holt McCallany, I think, on that one. Scott Eastwood. Okay. Hypnotic, right. That's the Ben Affleck one. This is about a detective who becomes entangled in a mystery involving his missing daughter and a secret government program while investigating a string of impossible high-end heists. That's a lot. So there's a lot going on in there. I like Robert Rodriguez overall, even something like Alita, which I didn't think quite worked. It was an interesting failure. But this sounds like Ben Affleck working with John Woo on Paycheck or whatever the hell it was. I got a bad feeling about this one. Taylor Kitsch starring in Neil Blomkamp's Inferno. I think we talked about that last week. It's about a seemingly ordinary murder in the New Mexico desert, and the guy stumbles upon something bigger. So there's always something bigger. Oscar Isaac, right, in The Card Counter. I think we talked about that last week. He's going to be that's about a gambler and a former military guy who – right, a gambler slash military guy who goes to reform a young man seeking revenge on a mutual enemy. All right, sure. Jodie Foster, Shailene Woodley, Tahar Rahim, Benedict Cumberbatch, Prisoner 760. Benedict Cumberbatch, Lewis Wayne, a biopic of an English artist who's known for drawing cats. Like, what are these movies? Cumberbatch, what are you doing? Some of these things are just like, use my name for announcements, and then, you know, they get a paycheck, and it's just bizarre. Christoph Waltz, Lily Collins, and Gilded Rage. Leo from Toledo. This was a new Joe Carnahan one. This actually sounded okay. It's with Mel Gibson and Frank Grillo, but a former Kansas City mob hitman who comes out of witness protection to protect his daughter and granddaughter. I mean, you know, all these AFM log lines are very kind of generic, but every now and then, you know, you get some guilty pleasures. That's sort of where the guilty pleasures come from. The asset, which I mentioned earlier, is like Michael Keaton and Maggie Q are rival assassins. They're the world's best assassins. We've come a long way from Stallone and Banderas being the best of assassins. It's now Michael Keaton and Maggie Q. Maggie Q's mentor, played by Sam Jackson, gets murdered, and she has to team up with Keaton to find the killer. Gerard Butler, playing a pilot who has to land in the middle, land a plane in the middle of a war zone where there's militia. I'll tell you an interesting one is the Russell Crowe project. I think it's called the Georgetown Project, and he's like playing an actor who and like. Like the set of the movie that he's on is haunted, and he starts to unravel. I've heard it's kind of like a riff on The Exorcist, but instead of, you know, him playing the parent and his little girl becomes possessed, I think in the end it'll be like, you know, a turning of the tables, and Russell Crowe may end up being the one who becomes possessed by whatever force is on the set of this movie, and it's his daughter who will have to exorcise his demons, if you will. But yeah, AFM, just a frustrating time for reporters in general because we've, you know, it's like the news gets taken out of the hands of the studio, the agency, whatever it is, and it's all about these foreign sales agents because, you know, they're trying to drum up press, you know, so a lot of announcements go to Screen or Deadline, whatever it is. Speaking of, you know, frustrating things to deal with as a journalist. I wanted to, you know, take you guys behind the scenes, lift the curtain a little, and let you in on my little tiff with a company this week. We won't name the company, but we'll call it Am I Wrong? And Am I Wrong? Am I Wrong? Am I Wrong? I had been looking into this story about a very small kind of indie movie that Am I Wrong was doing. And I'd been talking to Am I Wrong's people for quite a while. Not quite a while, but a couple of weeks. And they said, hey, you know, just hang tight, check in. you know, we'll get back to you, blah, 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 blah. And then out of the blue, this story hits on one of the trades. So I see red, and I call up blah, 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 and at first I'm very calm and polite, and they're like, I know what you're calling about, and like, you know, they never apologize. That's what they say in Hollywood. You never apologize. It's a sign of weakness. And Am I Wrong says, well, what did you want me to do? The producers, the filmmakers, wanted this news to go to either Variety or Deadline. And I said, with all due respect, I don't give a fuck where the filmmakers want their news to break. I've had the news for 2 weeks. You asked me to sit tight, which I did out of respect. I did you and the filmmakers a favor, whether you let the filmmakers know or not. And then at the end of the day, you give this announcement somewhere else. And it definitely was given. That's what really, you know, got me pissed off this week, is because it was so brazen. The story, first of all, went to a reporter who is not generally known for breaking these kinds of announcements or stories. So it felt like a handoff. There was a quote in the story from the director. And when there are quotes in stories, that means that, you know, somebody had to sign off on this quote. So, like, it wasn't like something that Variety heard or, you know, whoever heard and they just posted. You know, like, it wasn't like a leak. This was something that was clearly arranged and set up. So, Am I Wrong? Goes, yeah, what do you want us to do? You know, the producers wanted it at a bigger outlet. And it's like, what do you want me to do? Should I just roll over and cede the space because the producer, like, nobody wants their news breaking on Collider. I mean, you know, unless maybe it's Colin Trevorrow or Rian Johnson or some kind of, like, fanboyish news. But for the most part, people want their news to break in the trades. That's how it's been for years, for decades, and how it's always going to be, quite frankly. And that's why I relish my position as the underdog. And so I'm just like, yeah, what do you want me to do? You want me to roll over and just let them do it because that's what the filmmakers would prefer? I don't care. I have a job to do. I thought I was working with you guys on this, and this is how you treat me. So I got my sweet revenge on Am I Wrong a couple days later when I found another piece of information on another project, and I didn't go to them. And I asked the actress's representatives about it, and apparently I was such a pain in the ass that they never called back, and they snitched on me. They ratted me out to Am I Wrong. And they're saying, listen, we're getting a lot of calls from this guy. So Am I Wrong reached out, and they said, we heard that you've been, you know, making a lot of calls, and, you know, we've had the deal's not done, and we've had other people, you know, tracking this, and we'd like to work with you if you can hold. So, like, how do they think that this was going to go? And this is two different, you know, parts. These are different people I'm dealing with at Am I Wrong? And I talked to my editor about it, and, you know, fortunately, Frosty had my back, and it was like, no, why would I hold? I don't understand streaming services and tech companies and how secretive they are and how they expect you to wait for the deals to be done in the world, in this magical world of television, okay? TV reporters are like the weakest people on the planet. I don't understand it. I understand holding news from time to time, cutting deals, being a nice guy, doing people favors, etc. I do it all the time. I'm holding news at every major studio right now. And that's about relationships. These streaming companies are so arrogant that they don't even want to have that relationship, really. You know how many times I've asked people at streaming companies, the CorpCon people, hey, why don't we get a lunch? Why don't we have a little FaceTime? They don't think that Collider is important. They think that their job is to service the old industry trades and mainstream media like the New York Times and the LA Times because they're the New York Times and they're the LA Times. Let me tell you something, people. I would put myself up as a reporter against anyone on the LA Times or the New York Times entertainment staffs. Like, just because they're the New York Times doesn't mean that they know this town or cover this town better than I do. And they don't. So if these streaming companies, like Am I Wrong, want to, you know, continue to prioritize other outlets or think that I'm insignificant in the scheme of things, well, we're going to disabuse them of that notion. And that's exactly what we did. So that's why you saw the story about Darcy Carden being in negotiations to star in a league of their own. She's going to star opposite Abby Jacobson, the Broad City creator. It was initially reported by Hollywood Reporter that Abby Jacobson wasn't going to have a role on camera in this series. I don't even know why you'd make this series if you weren't going to be on camera. Like, what a fun show to be a part of. I can't even imagine, like, in what world would Abby Jacobson not be on this show? So she is going to star. Darcy Carden is going to co-star. Darcy Carden is an actress who I'm actually a big fan of. She has stolen scenes in several things that I've seen this year. She's really come on. I don't watch The Good Place. So, like, I don't know her from that show. That's obviously what she's best known for. She's also on a handful of episodes of Broad City. But to me, she's been stealing scenes in Barry. She stole scenes in Bombshell. She stole scenes in Greener Grass. And she's just the kind of actress who makes you sit up and take notice. And say, who is that? What's her name? And so, I was Googling her the other night. And, like, an hour after I was Googling her, I got the tip that she's going to be in the show. So, again, I could have held that story and gone at the same time as everybody else. But in this magical world of TV, why do you have to wait for deals to close? Like, I understand some actors are just flooded with offers each pilot season, and so you never know where negotiations could lead, or, you know, there's a zillion things that could kill a deal. But I don't know. Darcy Carden, she's not like some A-lister. She's definitely a rising actress. This is a meaty lead role in a big streaming series based on a hot IP. Like, I just did not see her turning it down. So, you know, when they say, well, the deal's not done, what could fuck up this deal? Like, I don't understand. Like, and if it did get fucked up, then that's on you two. That's on the two people who are in the room negotiating. That's not on me. Ignore my article. My article is just telling people, taking a snapshot of this project and where things stand right now, which is that she's in negotiations. So if other outlets don't feel that her being in negotiations are news, right? And they've decided to hold, or maybe they're not sure the deal is going to make, so they want to wait for Amazon's green light, and they'll tell us when the story is ready to go, then that's their prerogative. But I made a different editorial decision, which is that this is a newsworthy story right now, her being in negotiations. If I thought the negotiations were going to fall apart, I wouldn't have reported them. I always thought the deal would make. And I don't understand, like, her reps not even – they didn't even call back. And so I made sure to send them that link because that's just the kind of guy I am. And so, you know, I know I have a reputation, this kind of reputation in the industry for being, you know, a difficult person or whatever. And I know that probably the other reporters and the other newsrooms who had been holding this story look at me and they say, well, why can't Jeff Snyder play ball? Does he think he's better than us? Or, like, you know, who the hell is this guy? Like, we've been holding this even longer than he has. But it's like, guys, if you had any idea how I was treated earlier in the week by Am I Wrong, you would know. You'd know I was completely justified in doing what I did. And it's going to continue. In fact, it's going to continue right now with the rumor of the week. This week's rumor of the week is brought to you by me, Jeff Snyder, the N. Snyder. So Amazon is developing a show with the Russo brothers. It's a spy series. It was already announced, the Russo brothers and then the guys from Midnight Radio, which is like Josh Applebaum, Andre Nemec, Scott Rosenberg, that whole production company. And all that we really know is that it's a spy series at this point. Well, I have heard that one Priyanka Chopra, international superstar, is poised to play the lead on that series. I've heard she might even be joined by Richard Madden, but Richard Madden also stars on Netflix's Bodyguard, so I don't know if that makes sense to me. I don't know that I would believe that if you guys do decide to write up this news. I'd leave him out. I'm just throwing him out there because that was part of the initial tip. I still have my suspicions about whether that is real or not. But Priyanka Chopra, that is a headline. You should all feel free running and make sure that you cite it. Collider's Jeff Snyder at the Snyder Cut, which airs on Collider. You can find it on Collider every Friday afternoon. Make sure to find it on Apple Podcasts, wherever, blah, 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 Spotify. If you're listening to this now, you know where to find it. But tell your friends where to find it, guys, because this is the real reel. This is the good shit. The Glengarry leads. Okay, I'm not doing some sanitized podcast here. I'm calling out the things that I see, the weirdness that I see all around me, the injustices that I suffer on a day-to-day basis, no longer being at the trades. If that's the penalty I got to pay, so be it. Speaking of news that broke outside of the trades, we've got a scream update from Bloody Disgusting's Brad Miska. He said that Gary Barber, who left MGM last year with a huge payout, he started a Spyglass Media Group, or that's where he was before. I don't know. Spyglass is his company. They have the rights to the Scream movies, and they are bringing back a new Scream. Whether this will be a Scream 5 or a straight reboot, it's unclear. I think it's going to be a reboot. I think it's time to move on from Sidney Prescott and Neve Campbell and, you know, David Arquette. Like, I don't even know who's around, who's still alive. I think David Arquette's dead at this point. But the point is, I think we got a reboot with a brand new cast. I'd like to start by nominating Diana Silvers from Ma, who was, you know, really good in that. I think she's a good young actress. She impressed me in Booksmart, and she's obviously very, very pretty. Although, I'm not allowed to say that. Not allowed to say that, even though people of other persuasions can say things about Zac Efron. What else? The Corporation, that Benicio del Toro project about the Cuban mafia, that's moving forward. That got a new writer on it this week, Tyler Hissel. This sounds like a really cool project. Leonardo DiCaprio is producing it for Appian Way. It's over at Paramount. I hope that this one comes together, and I hope that they get a great director on this, because I would love to see just like a badass, you know, like almost like Benicio del Toro's The Irishman, if you will, except it's like the Cuban men, the Cuban, the Corporation. I dig it. The Equalizer is getting a TV reboot on CBS. Yikes. Starring Queen Latifah. Weird, huh? Queen Latifah stepping into Denzel's shoes. They actually starred together in The Bone Collector. She played his caretaker in that movie. It was a gender-flipped role, actually, because in the books, his caretaker is male. And in this series, the character is typically male, and now it'll be female. Will Robert McCall become Roberta McCall? I don't know. Maybe they'll probably just give her a brand new name. Maybe she'll be playing the daughter of Robert McCall. Maybe she learned all her skills from her daddy. I don't know. But Queen Latifah, you could do worse. You know, I'm not going to watch this show. It's CBS, like, whatever. But I don't know. I could see Queen Latifah actually, I could see this being a hit for CBS. I mean, they managed to turn all kinds of worse IP into hits. So what do I know? Speaking of television, this is a movie. This was based on a TV series. Sandra Bullock signed on to star in this Netflix drama based on the I think it's the BBC series Unforgiven. This is a project that has been in the works over at Graham King's company for like the better part of a decade. Christopher McQuarrie, Oscar winner, wrote the script. He wrote it for Angelina Jolie. It was developed as a starring vehicle for her. 9 years later, still hasn't gotten made. So Sandra Bullock, who just, you know, starred in Bird Box over at Netflix, which got 80 million people to watch that in the first 4 weeks, a huge, you know, that became a rare streaming event. So, you know, don't be surprised that she's going back to the streaming service to do this. And I love the idea of Sandra Bullock reciting Christopher McQuarrie's dialogue. This is like about a woman who, you know, has a shady past, and you know, when she comes back to the community that she left after getting out of prison, and you know, she's not treated very well, and how, you know, how she struggles with that. It sounds like a hell of a role for Sandra Bullock, who has not been in the Oscar race since Gravity. Of course, she won for The Blind Side. There's a Weed sequel in the works over at Showtime. Mary Elizabeth Parker coming back. Mary Louise Parker. Forgive me. Mary Louise Parker Mary Elizabeth Winstead, Mary Louise Parker coming back for the Weeds sequel. I really liked Weeds the first few seasons, and then the show kind of wore out its welcome. I'm sure there's a totally new way that you could do it these days, considering where we are. Weed's been legalized all over. There's a weed store in every corner. Like, you know, you don't need weed dealers so much anymore. So that could actually be an interesting, you know, an interesting update, if you will, by taking Weeds into this century. The Nigeria foreign language Oscar kerfuffle, that was interesting to me. That is the problem with when you change the name of a category. So the rules never changed. It was always, you know, designed to honor the best foreign language film. It's no longer called the best foreign language film. It's called the best international feature film. So when you change it from best foreign language film to best international feature film, maybe there are people who just think, okay, well, then it doesn't need to be in a foreign language anymore. That is obviously not the case. The rules did not change. And so Nigeria, whose official language is English because they were colonized, you know, I guess 90% of this movie is in English. And so it got disqualified. And Ava DuVernay went on Twitter and she was, you know, raising a fuss. And she's, a prominent Academy member. I understand what the issue is. And I think that's why the Academy should just go back to best foreign language film, because then it's kind of clear right in the name. To have the award for best international feature, I mean, you know, are Guy Ritchie's crime movies then up for it because those are UK productions? You know, like that are those films filmed in like Scotland or Ireland that are in English? Those are international films, but they're not foreign language films. So are those all of a sudden eligible? I think this was another terrible decision by the Academy. Not to DQ Nigeria, because under the rules, it should have been DQ'd. It was a bad idea to change the name. And when people are saying, well, do we ever want Nigeria to be able to compete? It's like, yeah, we do, but they have to make it not in English. And they do speak other languages in Nigeria, or at least, you know, a decent percentage of the population does. And unfortunately, that's just, you know, the whole point of that award is to honor films done in a different language. So, you know, it's unfortunate that happened, and, you know, it sucks that it happened to Lionheart, because they kind of got caught off guard, and it sounds like a good movie. I've heard good things. But, yeah, it's not going to happen for them, and I can't really, you know, advocate for a rule change to better fit the category name. I heard Jordan Rumi. I read Jeff Wells' blog, Hollywood Elsewhere, a lot, and he links a lot to Jordan Rumi and his World of Real. And I guess there were a list of the 10 best performances of the decade. He also pulled people in a top 5 TV shows of the decade. I think I did Breaking Bad number 1. That seems to me like a clear, kind of undisputed number 1. I put American Crime Story at number 2. I'd give the edge to OJ, but God, I just love Versace. I think both seasons of that show have been brilliant. I did Fargo. I love all 3 seasons of Fargo. Mindhunter. I'm just a sick twist when it comes to serial killers. And then the 5th slot. What the hell did I put for the 5th slot? I don't even remember. I don't even remember. But check out World of Real for that list. And then, you know, as far as the 10 best performances of the decade go, tough to narrow it down. I think Casey Affleck is kind of just head and shoulders the best performance of the decade. Joaquin was great in Joker. I think Michael Fassbender in Shame is terrific. DiCaprio in Wolf of Wall Street, Jesse Eisenberg in The Social Network, Jake Gyllenhaal in Nightcrawler. That's kind of a weird one, along with maybe Bradley Cooper in A Star is Born. Like, those were my top movies of their respective years, and you know, a lot of those that had to do with their leading men. Daniel Day-Lewis in Lincoln. Or you could say Phantom Thread. I mean, really, he sort of widely acknowledges as the best living actor, even though he has retired. And then J.K. Simmons for Whiplash. That's just a force of nature performance. And on the female side, I would say Jennifer Lawrence in Silver Linings Playbook, Natalie Portman in Black Swan, and Fran McDormand in 3 Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. Those are sort of like the best performances that I can recall this decade. Not even necessarily the best, but just like the iconic ones that will stand out and I think stand the test of time. So yeah, let me know, you know, what you might put on a list like that. What else have we got? I want to tell you about all like the things that I've been watching and God, okay, we had trailers this week for Bad Boys for Life. I mean, God, did you guys see my tweet about take a drink every time that they say bad boys or bad boy or, you know, whatever in that trailer? I'm telling you, you won't even make it to January. You'll be dead of alcohol poisoning by the end of the day. They're just riding that song right into the ground. I don't know. I got a bad feeling about that one. Don't tell Josh McCouga. Wendy, there was a trailer for Ben Zeitlin's new movie. It's a Peter Pan tale. I felt like I was watching Beasts of the Southern Wild all over again. Can't believe that this took as long as it did to come together. It may very well be a beautiful movie. And I know that I tweeted about not judging a movie by its release date. But the February release date, you know, honestly does give me pause. I think that if this was a real awards contender, Searchlight probably would have held it. Either had it come out this past fall or put it out, you know, next fall. So maybe they just don't see it like that. I think it's really tough to top a movie like Beasts of the Southern Wild. I mean, God, even the score. It felt like the exact same score. Just, I don't know, a little too twee and whimsical. Whatever. It didn't really do it for me. What did do it for me, though, was the Invisible Man trailer. Oh, my goodness. I thought that looked fucked up in the best way possible. It's like, you know, you're driving this woman crazy. You're gaslighting her. You're making her think that she's crazy, but she's not. Just some really messed up scenarios. It looked bloody. Lee Winnell. I mean, you know, keep in mind, this is the guy who wrote Saw. Who I don't know if he wrote it or co-wrote it with James Wan. I forget. But Saw is a masterpiece and really the last horror movie that launched like a legit fucking franchise. I mean, I guess that and Paranormal Activity. I guess The Conjuring too. But yeah, I'm a big believer in Lee Winnell. I think that this is going to be a big step up from Upgrade. It looks like it is. Elizabeth Moss looks really good. Like this may hold the key to the dark universe going forward. Like, I don't know that there needs to be a connected universe. Maybe that's something that you kind of have fun with in Paul Feig's Dark Army. But if you just get a bunch of interesting up and coming filmmakers together, like a Lee Winnell, and give him the keys to the kingdom on these characters, they could surprise you. Movies I saw. Ford versus Ferrari, absolutely terrific. Like, a little long, it's about 2.5 hours, a little formulaic, but just delightful. Winning performances from Bale and Damon. So great to see Damon, you know, get back on the horse after a rough patch with Suburbicon and downsizing. I'd heard, you know, that he even was like, listen, I've kind of been on a slide, so, you know, is this movie as good as people are saying that it is? He was kind of wondering that aloud, and yeah, I think that it is. I thought it was just old school Hollywood entertainment. I think people are going to have a blast at this. I think it could be the best racing movie I've ever seen. And as far as who's better, because people are saying, oh, well, Christian Bale's running best actor in a leading performance again. So is Matt Damon. Like, who would get the edge? I mean, they may cancel each other out. I think it's a tough field this year either way. But I loved what Damon was up to here. It was like this Texan, like, good old boy. I just, man, James Mangold, another mainstream home run from him. I watched Dark Waters. I think I'm embargoed on that. Can't really say much. It was good. Dark Waters is good. It's just a movie that you've seen before. And Ruffalo is his always great self. But I'll have more to say about that closer to release. I saw Motherless Brooklyn and Black and Blue over the weekend. Motherless Brooklyn, again, 2.5 hours. You know, kind of slow. But I liked it. It was just interesting. It had something to say. Norton was good, but I thought Alec Baldwin and Willem Dafoe were both great. I love the score. like, you know, Tom York from Radiohead does an original song, and then that song, I don't know if the song influenced the score or if the score influenced the song, but just the whole Motherless Brooklyn theme. I love, like, the noirish atmosphere that he created. It's kind of getting unfairly shit on, a lot like The Goldfinch. Warner Brothers isn't having much luck this fall with its dramas, but, you know, if you've got some time, check out Motherless Brooklyn. It is definitely worth a look. I also saw Black and Blue, the Naomi Harris, Tyrese Gibson movie. This was kind of exactly what I was expecting from the trailer. You know, it's like a guilty pleasure of sorts. There just weren't enough, like, twists for me. It actually played things a little too straightforward. I mean, I'm not surprised. Like, it's a great premise. Because, like, cops are out there doing all kinds of crazy shit. And, you know, from every now and then, a bystander catches it on their cell phone. But these body cams, I think, are going to be real issues going forward. They're going to catch some crazy shit. And I wonder if, you know, cops would ever turn on their own. It's just a really pulpy premise. It's not great. It's probably, you know, wait a few months to rent that on iTunes or something. But, you know, Naomi Harris did a good job. The Nightingale, I watched again last night. If anyone thinks, you know, The Babadook is like a good movie, for Christ's sake, watch The Nightingale. It's so much better. It really may be a masterpiece. Eshling Ferenczi is terrific. Bibali Ganang Kamar, I'm not pronouncing that correctly, he's amazing. Blows my mind that nobody's talking about these two performers in terms of awards. Knives Out, I had to finally admitted on Twitter this week and come out and say, just wasn't a big fan of this movie. I love murder mysteries. I eat them up. I felt like this. I don't want to spoil anything. It's just, I just didn't care for it. I didn't like how it was structured. I didn't know what Daniel Craig was doing in this movie. He's kind of on a completely different page than the rest of the cast. If you've seen the trailers, you know what I'm talking about. Just didn't work for me. And don't make it out to be like a Rian Johnson thing. I thought Last Jedi was okay. This was just, eh. There was something else I saw this week. All right. The Netflix stuff. I watched the documentary Tell Me Who I Am about these, like, twin brothers, and one brother is in an accident and he loses his memory, and so he has to rely on his twin to sort of tell him about his life. But the twin, you know, their life was tough, and the twin wants to shield him from this and shield him from some of the scars that he himself has. And so he sort of lies and invents this story, and when the brother finds that out, he's betrayed. And it builds to, like, this incredible climax. Like, the last half hour of this movie is just devastating. Tough to watch, but I would definitely recommend checking that out on Netflix if you haven't. And also, stay there for The Devil Next Door. Both projects executive produced by Josh Braun. The Devil Next Door is an incredible five-episode, like, limited series, basically mini-series about, or docu-series, whatever the hell you want to call it, about a guy who was basically accused of being this horrible Nazi named Ivan the Terrible. He was just like this Ukrainian immigrant living in Ohio. And he, you know, people tracked him down and said, "You're this Nazi." And he said, "No, I'm not." And they sent him back to Israel. And, like, it just twist after twist, like a jaw-dropping trial, an incredible case, lots of interesting supporting characters, and a great last twist. So, like, just watch every episode of that. You won't be disappointed. All I would ask Netflix is that, you know, the end of the story, you know, which has been caught up in telling the story of the Holocaust and all the survivor testimony, you know, it ends with, like, these shots of graves and trees. You know, we're always talking about planting trees in Israel as a symbol of the Jews who lost their lives. And then it's just this beautiful ending. And then immediately, like 5 seconds later, the King trailer starts. Netflix, you got to let people sit with some of this stuff. Like, I understand when a Big Mouth episode ends, and then you can say, well, you know, wait 5 seconds, we'll get you to the next Big Mouth episode or the next, you know, F is for Family episode, because if you like Big Mouth, you'd like F is for Family. Give me more than 10 fucking seconds to grieve the 6 million Jews killed in the Holocaust before I start seeing Timothée Chalamet stab people on a battlefield. Like, you know, Schindler's List, I don't want to see Minority Report immediately after Schindler's List, because they're both Steven Spielberg movies. And if you like this, you'll like this one too. algorithm. Give it a rest. We're humans. We have feelings. If you have any emotions at all, you'd be crying at the end of The Devil Next Door. Yeah. Like, let's just pump the brakes. Anything else? Guys, if you're not watching Watchmen, I hope that you should start. I mean, wow. What a great show on HBO. All right, that's what I wanted to talk about. You know, HBO released a 2020 slate video, and I love my friends at HBO. I love them, and I have been watching more programming, particularly Watchmen. And, God, Tim Blake Nelson on the show is amazing. I watch Barry. I tune into John Oliver from time to time. But, you know, I'd given up on Insecure and Ballers and Divorce. Like, I petered out on all those shows. I was never a Game of Thrones guy. I couldn't get into Succession or The Deuce. So, you know, I'd kind of gravitated towards Showtime for the most part. But with this 2020 video, HBO showed that it really does have the goods. They have a ton of cool stuff coming, notably The Outsider, the Stephen King adaptation, Lovecraft Country from Jordan Peele and J.J. Abrams, a new Armando Iannucci series, a series with Merritt Weaver and Phoebe Waller-Bridge and Donald Gleason, limited series with Nicole Kidman. Like, they just have a lot of stuff. And so it's good to see HBO, like, because there's just been so much talk about Disney Plus and Apple TV Plus and HBO Max. It's like, don't lose sight of the OG, which is HBO. Although, which brings me to the giant butt. I did watch the first episode of His Dark Materials this week, and it was so boring. Like, I'm just not a fantasy guy. I will be upfront about that. I never liked, whether it's Harry Potter or Game of Thrones or Lord of the Rings. I don't know why I thought I would like His Dark Materials. I mean, I like McAvoy, Lin-Manuel, Ruth Wilson. But yeah, this was just boring. Not for me. Couple other things this week. Guys, we announced a new screening series. Four Year Consideration Collider has partnered with Arclight Cinemas on a Four Year Consideration screening series. We're going to be screening, you know, all the top awards contenders, interviewing A-list celebs after taping actual episodes of FOIC at the Arclight. And we're still going to do, you know, our weekly studio show as well. But yeah, big things coming on that front. And it's exciting. You know, when I came to Collider, I think that, you know, awards coverage was sort of out of sight, out of mind. I mean, Adam Chitwood was doing stuff on the website, but we weren't really doing anything here at Collider Video. And I really pushed for, you know, an investment in awards coverage and came up with the idea for four-year consideration and developed it with Perry. And we thought, you know, who's the best person to host this show? Because, you know, Collider fans get enough of me and Perry in a given week. And we thought, you know, there's only one guy for it, and that's Scott Mance. And, you know, we just taped our return episode, if you will, heralding this news. We run down the best picture predictions. So I think you're really going to like that episode. It's a good team. It's good chemistry, and we all think very differently. You know, Mance and I couldn't be further. And Perry is kind of the voice of reason in the middle. So make sure that you check that out because we're going to have a lot of exciting stuff from FYC coming out. I think that'll probably do it for this episode. Probably had a little bit more time left, but, you know, we'll go short. We'll go short this week. Let me just check my email, make sure there's nothing, no crazy things here. Ooh. They do. The funny that we mentioned the Bone Collector in this episode. NBC has sent Lincoln Rhyme, Hunt for the Bone Collector, as a mid-season premiere. That's a mouthful. But I do like that they got the Bone Collector in there because I don't think anybody really knows who Lincoln Rhyme is, even though I love all those books by Jeffrey Deaver. By the way, speaking of books, I've been reading the Richard Ramirez book, The Night Stalker. Wow. Hell of a book. I know that story's been told before. I think maybe Lou Diamond Phillips played him. But if somebody did the Richard Ramirez story right as like a major, either a Zodiac-level movie or a gigantic, maybe even like a season of Mindhunter, that would be awesome. What a great story. I think, you know, I'm going to wrap it up here. I got to get writing, guys. I've been on video all morning. I got some stuff to do, some stuff to take care of. This has been The Snyder Cut. You can follow me on Twitter, on Instagram, on Cameo, at the InSnyder. Nobody's bought a Cameo to say, hey, great, great podcast, Snyder. I mean, you guys are getting this podcast for free. The least you can do is buy a goddamn Cameo. I'll make them fun, I promise. But no, really, you guys are the best. Anyone who sat through this, sat through my Am I Wrong rant, etc., make sure to credit on that Priyanka Chopra thing if you guys do pick it up. But yeah, that's the episode. Enjoy the weekend. Try to check out Terminator. They did a good job with this, and the movie just did not do well at the box office. It sank like a stone. Give it a chance if you're even on the fence. And we will be back next week for yet another episode of The Snyder Cut.
It's that little Chico Pitbull, Mr. 305, but it said Mr. Worldwide. You already know what it is. Listen to my new podcast, From Negative to Positive. Subscribe today. Now, part of the things that we're doing over here at Negative to Positive is encouraging people to change their lives, change the things that are within their power. I want to thank our good friends at KFC for helping me bring this to you. Feed your whole crew with KFC. Let's go. I can get the KFC bucket of chicken, and you know, that's fire. Now, Babu, you know that you can get that mac and cheese, that mashed potato, gravy, those biscuits. Now, that's trouble right there. That is fire right there. You know, on Negative to Positive, we always talking about striving and achievement. And the Colonel Sanders story is a story that inspired me since I was 10 years old. Look how life comes full circle. Now I'm talking about Colonel Sanders and Kentucky Fried Chicken and how much I love it. Listen to my new podcast, From Negative to Positive. Check out the vodcast. Subscribe today. Apple Podcast. Podcast One. Spotify.
Shop Black Friday week deals Sunday through Friday at Kohl's. Plus, get $15 Kohl's cash for every $50 spent. And take an extra 15% off. Get the big one throws, $8.49. Toastmaster small appliances are just $2.14 after rebate. And Fitbit Versa 2 is $129.99. Plus, take 30% off Lego, 70% off fine jewelry, and save on boots for her, $16.99. Plus, get fast and free store pickup. Shop Black Friday week deals at Kohl's and Kohl's.com.
Select styles. Offers valid November 22nd through the 27th. 15% off with promo code ENJOY15. Lego and Fitbit offers and coupons do not apply. Some exclusions apply. See store or Kohl's.com for details.